Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams. And this is the State of the Union Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Get it.
What are we talking about, Scott? What's the biggest sports story in sports business this week?
But it's got nothing to do. Like, the president actually has his State of the Union speech. That's about the whole of the
joke.
What joke? Oh, there's no joke. I don't get it. I'm going to give you another chance because there is
say the same.
No, no, no. There's no way. No. We're in a new studio. We have new spaces. We have director's chairs that don't have a foot thing for you. I swapped it out. We've got
struggling.
Heavy microphones. Yeah. We're struggling here in the new environment. And you choose to ignore all that to go to the State of the Union to talk about the Dartmouth union vote.
Yes, exactly what happened.
No. Look for the union label version of the something. Do you know that one? Are you old enough to know the look for the union label?
I was thinking about a Union Jack joke.
No, that's
not to do that.
No. Union Jack would be British, right? But you really don't know Look for the Union Label?
I do not know. Look for
Please
the union
Google it when you're done. This is just brutal. I mean,
new setup, but same same jokes.
Same awful discussion. But
from the group.
I'm on a 1 to 10. Where are you in comfort?
One.
I was going to give it 2, and I have the footrest. This is the weirdest thing. Like, one part of the footrest is almost wide enough for a shoe. The other one is not. And if I wanted, I have to go sideways. And then I'm too squished.
Yep.
And I said, why don't we just have regular chairs? And you said, nobody knows Nelson, but Nelson, our design guru here at Penske, he loved the director chair idea.
Yeah.
You and I both hate it.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway,
for people who are listening, which is most of our audience, who don't watch this on YouTube, we have a new setup here. Scott and I are in person. Looking at each other in the same room for one of the first times since this show started.
Yeah, I didn't know you were on the other side. Oh, it's you. It really is you on the other side. This is good.
You have legs. I didn't know. But I think this is going to be our setup for most episodes of Scott and I Are in the Office moving forward. I like this.
Well, you know how... Well, there's only...
Way more easier and fun free-flowing.
There's only one way this will be our setup moving forward.
Is if I learn how to do...
No, that I'm going to say if Cora Veltman is sick or can't be here or Matt Palacio is sick and cannot be here, we are screwed because we had... What do you say, guys? It was like 30 minutes of setup time to make sure this was right. Well, we could have gone more, but no, they did a great job.
Holding a union vote in the back right now to unionize as the behind camera work here, which is an easy transition.
That was your you made your own transition.
I made my own transition because we went way too long on the.
I don't think so. People need to know. Tell me, how long have we been going? You said your eyesight, you could see the computer over there.
We have been going for 3 minutes and 54 seconds.
I got 250.
Well, I think you started after.
I did, but all right. Well, that's why this is important to know. Anyway, that's why I need to know it. I'm old, I can't see. Three minutes in. That's enough. That's not overkill. It's just scene set.
Heck of a start to the new studio. Big news this week, Scott. Dartmouth men's basketball team, 15 players, all 15 voted 13-2 to form the first college athlete players union in college sports history, a fairly momentous moment coming at a time of great change across college sports and college sports business more broadly. What are your initial, are you a sky is falling guy? Are you, everything is about to change? Are you more measured? I've seen bits of both. How do you take this news relative to what's happening in college sports?
I take it that I think we know when anything reaches this point and once the courts get involved or, NLRB, and we've seen sort of this playbook before,
yeah,
that it's going to take a while. That's it. I mean, there's going to be some wrangling, and it's going to take a while. We will have no answers in a week from now. We're going, could be years down the road, but at least the process has begun.
Yeah. There will be almost certainly going to be an appeals process, maybe even multiple appeals processes, yeah, depending on what Dartmouth decides to challenge. But if this is not stayed in the process, or if the appeals fail, Dartmouth, if it wants to keep having an athletic department in the way that we think about it, not just a men's basketball team, but an athletic department in the way that we think about it, is going to need to collectively bargain with its basketball players. And for NFL and NBA fans who are familiar with the way those labor talks work, it is everything from sharing in revenue. We can talk about wages and the minimum wage.
Hours of practice.
Yeah. Hours of practice. Another interesting, I mean, there's certainly healthcare and insurance implications. And then group licensing. The Dartmouth, I don't know, but I'm assuming the Dartmouth men's basketball program or whatever features photos of players, right? They have historically given that up for free to the athletic department as part of its licensing and NIL. Now I wonder if the union thinks, you know what, maybe we group license. Maybe we are now not just talking to the university about what we're getting compensated and hours and things like that. Maybe we're also working on group licensing deals that universities have taken for granted for a very long time.
Be great if the school went out and sold a UAW patch or an I steel worker union patch and put it on the jersey and like made the money where they didn't have to clue in the players.
Yeah.
Again, what do we say about things like this? Anytime, and I've done this on Twitter all the time, anytime there's a story that almost every outlet covers, what matters most is who you have at the keyboard. And can you feel any better than Mike McCann, you know, our legal reporter going up? And, you know, Mike knows all this stuff inside and out. He'll give you the perspective. I mean, go read the stories. We're not going to give it to you all here, but go read Mike's stories. Like, he will give you the nuance. He will give you the years of wisdom. Mike literally wrote the book with Ed O'Bannon on this subject. Mike was sitting before Congress testifying on NIL and should college athletes be paid and are they employees? Why not? And the implications of it. So if you want to get smart on this, go read Mike McCann and hear what he has to say. But he was at the game. He's going to have an opus coming out. So I can't wait to read that. Has anybody reach out, by the way? Like, you flesh out the story, of course, but with the vote being 13-2, did anybody talk to the two? And see what was the reasoning on the two? I didn't see it.
I don't know. I think the voting may have been blind. I don't know.
If you asked, they'll say. I think they'll.
Two of the guys came out and were like,
Who voted no? I'm curious. Yeah, who voted no and why?
It would be curious. Mike McCann's reporting has been great, Scott. As you mentioned, I'm here in your chair creak.
Oh, if I move, I'm afraid we're gonna go down. I'm going down. Like, I gotta move a little bit.
Mike did some really good reporting in the past week about the efforts at the last minute that Dartmouth did to try to swing some players into voting no. I talked to Mike at length yesterday about what he was seeing, what's next, and I grouped them in two buckets. The big questions we have next is, on the Dartmouth side, what does Dartmouth decide to do? We're going to have an appeal process almost certainly. We'll see where that goes.
Let's have a real fight by just absolutely scuttling the athletic department. No basketball
team.
Which
is a possibility, right?
So no, it's not going to
happen. A lot of people on Twitter say, well, Dartmouth is just going to fold its men's basketball team.
No, they won't.
You can't do that. Yeah. That is actually
That's illegal. Yeah, exactly. No, they will not.
It's a partial closure of the business. It's union busting. Dartmouth could theoretically decide that it wants all of its athletics
club sports.
To go to club sports.
Club sports.
Yeah. Essentially move everything from varsity down to club sports. That is a catastrophic option. It has been tossed around a little bit. Some of this, I think, is bluff calling in terms of what Dartmouth wants to be doing and what it doesn't. Dartmouth has all the Ivy League schools, and we should talk a little bit about
Ivy versus others. Yeah, why is this happening in the Ivy? Yeah. Well, there's a reason why it happened at Northwestern years ago with Kane Coulter, right?
100%. Dartmouth has an $8 billion endowment. This is a school that does not make money on basketball, but can afford to have 15 more employees at the university, right? The financial argument is not one in which Dartmouth cannot afford to have this, and we can widen it if other.
Do they have it all in Marcus by Goldman Sachs getting 5.05%? Is that where you think they have the money?
I'm sure that
since they're not paying. By the way, you know they're not paying taxes on these dividends, right? You know, right? Maybe somebody ought to come calling and say, hey, you want to fight the not employees? Yeah. Great, you pay taxes on those dividends of your endowment.
So question number one: Does Dartmouth do the catastrophic option and get rid of varsity athletics entirely? Do they try some middle ground, or do they embrace this idea and say, great, we're willing to work with, we're willing to bargain. We have the money to make this happen. We care about athletics. We want to do it right. We want to be a trailblazer for other universities. I think that's unlikely, but there is a chance that Dartmouth.
We saw the initial, statement from this university.
Yeah.
Nothing about that statement would make me feel as if the path they are going to choose is one of, let's be trailblazer. Yeah. Yes, let us embrace this new world order. I don't think, obviously, they will go the route where they'd be in trouble if they sort of cancel the athletic department. So what I believe we're going to see is the wait and see approach. Yeah. Let's appeal. Okay, whatever happens there, let's appeal that. Let's push it down. You know, this could be the death row inmate that, you know, eventually down the line. It's midnight strikes and did the governor call or not? But that's years down the line. That is what I think the logical playbook will be here.
I think that's right. McCann has made some really interesting parallels between the potential men's basketball union and the dining workers union on campus at Dartmouth in Hanover, New Hampshire. The dining services unit also loses money. So
that argument was out.
Established a precedent of negotiating with a union in a business unit that is not profitable. The on-campus minimum wage at Dartmouth is $16.25, I believe, double the national minimum wage. The dining workers union has negotiated $21 an hour. So there is at least precedent for these unions negotiating higher wages than the basic campus minimum. These are all things that Michael is looking at as a trying to read the tea leaves of what may be up next. The second of the big buckets of what happens next is what happens at colleges around the country. This is much easier to do at private universities than public universities. Are other Ivy League men's basketball teams thinking about this? Are other Ivy League football teams thinking about this? Are athletes at Northwestern, which you mentioned, and USC and Miami?
What would Eben Novi Williams, 4-year captain of the lightweight, never won a game football team at Princeton University, how would he have voted on this if they said, hey, are you an employee of the university? Do you feel as if you qualify for employee status?
Sprint football, I think, is unique in some ways. I think if I was an athlete in a different sport, I am
real football. Okay, real football.
I'm naturally.
If you're Keith Elias, right? Did I get that right? Keith Elias, was that Princeton?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. If I'm Zach Diassi at Brown, I think that I personally would be in favor of this. I mean, I think this is a historic moment, and I don't want to get too deep into my own personal opinions. I think that college athletes have been.
It's a job. I have seen it. I have. I don't know the. I'm not Mike. I don't know the legalities. I do know this, that I have. When I was in school, I went to Syracuse University, so that it's not a small time athletic program.
Private school.
A private school. I knew plenty of guys and women who were on the teams and the premier teams: basketball, lacrosse, football, of course. And I saw firsthand the number of hours that were committed to practice, weightlifting, training table. I looked at it as a full-time job on top of being a student and the rest and all the other things that they were asked to do. So, you know, that's just knee-jerk. And by the way, is it appropriate just because we're next to each other?
Yes.
Did you see my glazed look at all? Or did I held? Should I? No, when you were talking about the dining hall, I go back to a personal experience. Bad idea. We had a Jell-O eating, hands behind your back, Jell-O eating speed contest when I was a freshman.
Okay.
At Delplane Hall, if you will. And I you know, going really fast, and I sucked, and the Jell-O just got lodged. And I'm up with the choking sign, entire dining.
Behind your back.
Oh, at this point, I took it out when I was like, I'm dying here. Couldn't breathe. Stuff's leaking out of my mouth, and everybody in the dining hall is looking at me. And so, lesson for all,
I don't know, choking on Jell-O was even possible.
Oh, it's definitely, well, you know, like a
kind
chunk
of liquid, isn't it?
No, well, it didn't melt fast enough for me. It's gelatinous, if you will. That's the Jell-O. But man, that was scary,
it was
disgusting.
Pay for footage of that.
It was red. I had the red. I was racing against one Peter Cooperstein,
okay,
if you will. So if he's
so
if,
lost, I assume.
I lost. Yeah, I was disqualified. I DQ'd.
So let's talk about the Ivy League for a second, because
supposed to know about the Ivy League? You went to one of those schools.
It's not a coincidence in my mind, in a lot of people's minds, that this is happening at the Ivy League. The timing works out really well. Dartmouth men's basketball team did not qualify for the Ivy League tournament. Their season ended this week. So when the union is finally certified at some point in the next few days, there's no eligibility.
No scholarships.
On the immediate horizon. Ivy League schools do not offer athletic scholarships. And Ivy League schools, going back to real quick, the idea of dropping all your athletics down to from varsity to club. So many schools look at look at athletics as the front porch of the university. It's a way of driving enrollment, marketing. When you have really big success on the field, you see that effect oftentimes in enrollment. That's not true in the Ivy League. The men's basketball team, Princeton's team, or Yale's team, whoever
wins. Linsanity did not drive admissions.
It's not. There's no market of impact. There's no improvement of the applications. You're letting in such a small percentage of people already. Another 50% boost in applications does not change the makeup of your university all that much. So the calculus for a lot of Ivy League schools is just fundamentally different. And you notice it in scholarships as a good example. If you go to Ivy League basketball games or football games, they're not commercialized in the way that a lot of other leagues do. This is a very different conversation if it's at Syracuse or if it's at Miami. Schools whose athletic departments are really, really valuable. Not just bringing in direct money through sponsorships and TV, but also helping the university.
I would say sending money back to the university. Yeah, goals. Right.
So in some ways, the Dartmouth is such an interesting case here. And Mike McCann had such a great line in a story he did this week. Dartmouth is not not big time college athletics, but it is big time higher ed. Yes. And that's absolutely true. And I think that having a school, an Ivy League school, be the first to deal with a lot of these questions could actually set the tone for how a lot of schools, private schools that are much bigger athletic programs, may have to deal with this exact topic in the future.
How many of our listeners do you think know why is it called the Ivy League?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's a good question. I think probably not many, because when I first learned it, I was also surprised.
Right, people think it's Ivy, as it's like the Ivy Walls of Wrigley, when it's the Roman numerals IV, which is four, because there were originally four Ivy League schools. So, yeah.
And the Ivy League, one last thing on that, every university in the Ivy League is private. So it is not like we have with Northwestern a number of years ago, where there was this big question about peers in the same conference and what it means for a unionized team competing against non-unionized teams. Whereas if Vanderbilt were to do this, or if Syracuse were to do this, or if Northwestern were to do this in some capacity, then you have a league that is mixing public schools, where this is way thornier in a way that I don't fully understand, but way harder to accomplish, with schools on private schools where it can be as easy as this kind of vote. And that becomes an even bigger challenge in those conferences as well.
Well, do you know who doesn't have to worry about this anymore? The public versus private, the employee not, because this person is going to be an employee of a certain league, coming from the college ranks. Yeah. I think you know where I'm headed.
I do. Is her number 22?
Let me check all the ads. I thought you were going to say the initials CC. Yes, the initials are CC, and it is Caitlin Clark, who announced, no surprise, even though she had a year of eligibility. And that, I think that is the interesting discussion, actually. There was never a doubt. Some people, I don't know why they would say, oh, she's going to make less money in the WNBA than she. I mean, that's just silly. Because it's not apples to apples. All the NIL money that she has, those companies, those anything, that will follow her to the WNBA, where there's now ancillary revenue from professional contract and salaries and things like that. So she has already signed like a Gainbridge right off the bat. Yeah. By the way,
Wink.
Yeah, who also has the name on the arena where the Indiana Fever play. Ooh, a financial services company. So Panini, shortly before we started recording, there will be no shortage of revenue. It's not what you would think of as college NIL money, totally. But now it's like endorsements or whatever you want to call it. No shortage of revenue for Caitlin Clark. But I would, the question I have that remains, because the money was going to be there regardless. Like Caitlin Clark was going to make a lot of money either way.
Yeah.
I think we need to ask the question. She's going to, does she open against the New York Liberty? That number one game, the first game she plays, will do a monster number. People will tune in to see. My question is, when we are a month and a half, 2 months into the season, and she has got a Tuesday night game against, it doesn't matter, insert team name here, is that going to be less watched, less attended, less ballyhooed than if Caitlin Clark at Iowa, final year of eligibility, goes to, say, Rutgers, Michigan, whatever it may be? Does the attention dip? Because she's going to make money anyway. So what was the reason why she would say, okay, I'm going to jump to go professional?
I call this the messy question in some ways, right? What we saw
M-E-S-S-I.
M-E-S-S-I. What we saw in the Big Ten this year, as you said, is that every building Iowa played in set its own personal or longtime records for ticket sales that either sold out, there was demand, there was a lot more attention. It was very much like what Leo Messi did in his first half year in Major League Soccer. And is she going to have that effect in the WNBA? I think it's a great question. It's going to happen immediately, as you said. The first game is going to do a huge number. There's going to be a lot of attention. But is she in the fifth or sixth week of the season, when they're playing at the road in Las Vegas, or when they're playing on the road at the Mercury in Phoenix, how different is that? I don't actually know the answer to that. So I think we're going to find out. And the lights.
Were you just waving your arm as a motion sensor? I wasn't sure if you were alerting somebody or like. Okay,
you keep talking. I'll turn the.
That's okay. No, we're fine. We'll go in the dark. What's the difference? It's fine. Yeah, but that was my question. Like, I'd like to hear Caitlin. Like, what was the thought process behind now's the right time? Like, why go to the WNBA? Does it have to do with TV contract up in 2025? Like, you'd like to get her in. I mean, if she's looking bigger picture, getting her in now will certainly boost the number of viewers they have, yeah, which gives them a much better negotiating position for the TV deal in 2025. Yeah. So, and by the way, it also is up at the same time as the NBA deal. They will, like, whether you think yes, no, separate league, they will be negotiated in unison. It will get some help from the NBA. So, like, what's her calculus? That's all. I'd like to sit down with her and find out what went into the decision from a notoriety. You're one of the biggest stars. You're maybe the biggest star in college sports right now, male or female. So why do you need the different platform?
So I can toss out a few possibilities.
Let's hear it.
One, there's a chance that as a competitor, she just wanted the next challenge, right? I'm not saying that college basketball.
Well, she hasn't won a national championship.
She hasn't won a national championship, yeah. But I could see a world in which she's like, I've seen the thing in college basketball. I'm ready for whatever the next level is up to test my skills there. I think that's one possibility. Two, she knows the team that she would be drafting her. And that's actually fairly valuable information. And her, this has been written about a lot, her boyfriend, former Iowa basketball player, works for the Pacers. The Pacers and the Indiana Fever play in the same building.
Same building.
There's the same ownership group. It's a lot of overlap there. There's a good chance, I think, that Indiana not being too far away from Iowa, where she's from.
She didn't want to risk a team like, I don't know, not Las Vegas. Who's going to have the number? Who is the probable worst pick in the WNBA?
Totally,
right?
Like the Connecticut Sun or whatever. There's a chance that she really liked the idea.
Who doesn't love Uncasville?
Indianapolis, and that and that swayed her judgment. And then the third thing I'll say, which I actually do think maybe plays a factor here, is that she's only eligible to go back to school because of the COVID exemption. The fifth year of eligibility is not something that other athletes get, except for just athletes that have been that were playing college basketball in the year that COVID disrupted everything. And as the leading scorer in college basketball history, men and women, I do think she's probably a little bit aware that if she comes back and adds another 1,000 points onto that record.
Yeah, but everybody will know.
Having been granted that one extra year.
I don't know.
Is there an asterisk next to it? Do people talk about it differently?
Once I open
that maybe plays a factor.
Once I open the card, once I eat the stick of absolutely rigid bubble gum, and I look at the back.
Yourself.
Yeah, I know. And I look at the back of her card or hologram or whatever it may be at the time. Like, I'll know she set the record in 4 years. It's like, people will know she had an additional year, sure. But maybe we just lop it off the first 4 years. It's like, hey, these were her numbers in the fourth year, but she had a fifth, and this is what she did.
But don't count the points.
Yeah, we don't have to count this towards my records. It's a 4 year window, and that's what I did. Everybody knows. Like, yeah. I don't know. If she's worried about that, I'd be surprised.
I wanted to also get into the dollars because I meant to talk about it on the show last week, and we didn't. Her base salary in the WNBA is $76,000. It's not a lot of money, but there is a lot that in the last CBA, the most recent labor negotiation. negotiation between the WNBA players and the league that was set up to make to let the stars make more money. There's a she can make up to $200,000 additionally as being a part of a league ambassador to a degree. She can make another $100,000 on top of that up to by being a team ambassador. There are a lot of performance bonuses that players earn by being all-stars, by leading in scoring categories, by playing well into the playoffs, etc. There's a lot of ways just from the WNBA that her salary is going to be significantly more than the $75,000. And then, as you mentioned, all of the commercial partnerships continue, and then she layers on a lot more, including a valuable shoot.
The lion's share of her money is going to come from endorsements, 100%. And the lion's share of that will be the shoe deal, and how else can she be, right?
And you mentioned the news that broke on Wednesday, right before we started recording, a deal with Panini, an exclusive trading card and memorabilia autograph signing deal. Notable to me that that's not Fanatics. Fanatics and Panini are going head to head on pretty much everything in the trading card and memorabilia world right now.
I just figure at some point doesn't matter because like Fanatics will some figure out a way to snatch it away and she will be a Fanatics athlete
also,
at some point. Right.
So very possible. Yeah. She has a Topps deal right now in college. So she is part of the Fanatics empire now. And the fact that Fanatics was unable to or did not re-sign her and that the competitor swooped in, I also think is fairly notable to point out as well.
Knowing, she's going to be in demand. Knowing Michael Rubin, and we both know Michael Rubin, he has triangulated, if you will, the different ways in which Caitlin Clark will be a Nike or a Fanatics, some card, whatever.
It would definitely not. I mean, they're benefiting from. I believe they're the WNBA's official partner, right?
Yeah.
All the jersey sales and the e-commerce that happens around Indiana Fever and Caitlin Clark, they will benefit. Yeah.
I was surprised. We're upstairs. We always obviously kibitz before the show and just from the morning. Like I was really surprised when you said you thought she was going to wind up with Anta as a shoe deal.
Was that
not you? I'm sorry. That might have been a different discussion.
If I were a betting man, Scott Nike is the.
What are you wearing?
You're in the clubhouse.
What am I wearing? I'm wearing an REI because it's rainy here today. Now I'm wearing an REI shoe. You've got Nike. Any world in which you see Caitlin Clark does not wind up wearing the swoosh?
It would be a
major upset, right? Huge upset.
And the tea leaves are all pointing in one direction. That Nike is the WNBA's partner. It is also an investor in the league. Nike is what she has been wearing at Iowa. It was also Iowa's partner. If you watched the game where she broke the record, Scott, she did it on free throws. There was less than a second left. They inbounded the ball, half ended. Commercial number one.
Nike. Congratulations, Nike.
Spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Clearly, all the Nike hallmarks.
Which, by the way, 3.4 million people. Yeah, 3.4 million people watching that game.
There's just so much pointing in that direction. She was one of the first NIL deals that Nike did while she was in college. I think there's just, again, a lot of arrows pointing in a single direction. But that's not to say I would have said the same about Fanatics, right? If you had asked me last week, most likely, who does she sign for trading cards and memorabilia? Fanatics.
But if I said 1 to 10, you would have said 8 on Fanatics. Yeah, Nike, you're a 9.8. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the way that Nike is the dominant player in this world and the way that other companies like Under Armour and Adidas and Puma and New Balance, the way that they break in is they find whatever the tier is below the top tier. And they pay up for that because Nike's not willing to pay up for that. It's really hard to do that with the top tier.
Yeah.
Because Nike is willing to pay for the top tier, right? And Steph Curry is a shining example of Under Armour. Nike messed that up. It's well documented.
Well, I was going to say free advice for Nike. I was going to go there too. Yeah, yeah. Like when you are making the pitch, I would say when you hit the PowerPoint, do not say, "Dear Sabrina." And it's hard. Like, don't spell Caitlin with a K.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Y. Get the Caitlin right. It's C-A-I-T-L-I-N, Caitlin. So just get those things right. Some athletes care about that.
And Steph was a star when he left Nike to go to Under Armour, but he was not the bona fide A-plus list star that he became very shortly afterwards. So the challenge for all these other companies is that it's easy to pay up and pick people away from Nike if it's not the person Nike wants. And I cannot imagine, given everything we've seen and how successful and talented she is, that Caitlin doesn't fall firmly in the person Nike wants category.
I would think so. All right. Person maybe not so much wanted around right now. Vince McMahon, he had to resign as his position from TKO. Yeah. And he's got he sold how much? 420
million,
400 plus million in shares, about a quarter of his holdings. So now I have to multiply by 1.6 billion. See how fast, once I realized the quarter, he had sold some before, but you know, Brendan Coffey dug out the filing, so he sold another 400 plus million. Do you expect that to continue? Not material really. He's worth $2 billion. Just the fact that he is selling a significant portion of his holding.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The last 12 months for Vince and for TKO, he returned
Wild
to
ride,
WWE
yeah.
as part of and to help orchestrate the merger. Now it's WWE and UFC in the same publicly traded company. Then he left the company a few months ago after a new round of allegations about sexual coercion, some really ugly stuff in there. I don't know, Scott, if he's selling because he needs the cash. I don't know if he's selling because TKO wants him out, and this is a more tidy way to do that. There's a lot we don't know. It's definitely bad for TKO investors, at least right now. Anytime someone of that stature decides he's going to sell $400 million of equity, the stock dipped a little bit.
If this was a year ago, I'd say he needs some liquidity to join a bid group for the Commanders.
A lot has happened in that year.
Yeah, I don't think that would be it, but you know, that's what I would have said a year ago.
Yeah, so definitely at least a temporary challenge for TKO and its investors. But it seems like the Vince McMahon era at WWE/TKO.
Yep.
Is ending, and who knows if he's going to hold on to the rest, if he's going to gradually sell it. Certainly, if you're an investor, you don't want him selling it in huge chunks like this, right? Like, you'd rather right. a world where he was doing it quietly or slowly or in spread out over way bigger stretches of time.
If you're looking for institutional knowledge of the business, you would think that whether it be Ari or Mark Shapiro, somebody would be able to pick up the phone and be like, hey, Vince, what do you think about... You know, this is his baby, right? Totally. He wants to be totally involved. So, like you said, we don't know, but just what we do know, he sold $400 plus million exactly. worth of shares.
Right, cash richer right now.
Yeah,
than he was.
Yeah.
I'm
going to go and say he doesn't need it, but I'm just guessing that one. All right, so we're almost at 30 on my clock, not the one you can see. So I want to see you close the show as I put the microphone next to my chair and move back and forth. Gosh. Let me see if you can close the show with the creaks.
This was fun, Scott, doing this in person. He is Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. That is so annoying. I am Evan Novi Williams on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald, so thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, who I am looking
at. I can see her. She's right over there.
Who helped orchestrate all of this new setup, both visually and audio.
It's a squeak. It's not a crunch.
She would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.